The Lady in Black is coming back, and she will usher in NASCAR's return as well. Darlington Raceway, May 17th. Go ahead, put it in permanent marker on that paper calendar that you're still holding on to. There will be no fans in the stands. There will be no practice, no qualifying. Just jump in and go, and then get ready for like a crazy 11 days in the Cup Series, because Darlington is really just the beginning. NASCAR.
As the major leagues consider plans to restart their seasons, some sports are racing, literally, to come back. This Sunday, NASCAR returns in Darlington, South Carolina. If everything goes smoothly, it'll be a victory for a sport that has struggled for relevance in recent years. But even with a captive audience, can NASCAR really turn a corner? I'm Mina Kimes. It's Wednesday, May 13th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Is there a right way to say NASCAR where you sound like you've been a NASCAR fan your whole life?
The worst is when people refer to the car as a NASCAR.
Oh.
They're like, man, when he's behind the wheel of that NASCAR, no, that is not. It is not a NASCAR. NASCAR is the sanctioning body.
Yes.
They'd be like saying, man, that guy swings a great MLB.
Ryan McGee is a senior writer for ESPN and has covered NASCAR for more than 25 years.
So, Ryan, I am no NASCAR expert. Shocking, I know. I'm more of a Mario Kart fan.
Right.
But I find what is happening in NASCAR and motorsports right now very interesting, because this coming weekend, NASCAR is going to be one of the first major American sports to return to action ever since the pandemic shut everything down in March. The first race is this Sunday in Darlington, South Carolina. It's the 400-mile Cup Series. What is it going to look like, and how will it be different from what race fans are used to?
It's going to be odd because Darlington is a very technically difficult, probably the most difficult oval on the schedule. But once they get into the car and once they get through the first lap, they'll be okay, because it's just going to feel like a regular race. Once the green flag drops and then the checkered flag drops, if everything goes how they hope it will, it's going to feel fairly normal for a couple hours. It's everything around it that's just going to be so weird. It's everything that's going to lead up to the race, and it's all of the post-race procedures. And it's the fact that the place will be empty. So that'll be different.
How many people are even involved anyways? Because obviously, the driver is by himself, but he has a team, a pit crew. So there do need to be groups of people on the track.
This is the traveling circus. NASCAR and golf are the two sports where everyone packs up and they move on to the next place. And it's always the same group of people. The card in UFC changes, the card in boxing changes, but in golf and in NASCAR, it's the same support people, it's the same broadcasting folks, it's the same competitors, the same crews. I used to call it Bill France Senior High School back when I was out there for 30 weekends a year, because everyone, they eat together, they work together, they date, they fight. it's their world. On a regular Darlington weekend, where you have two of the three national series there, there are as many as 2,000, 2,500 people there working, not just with the race teams, but with Fox or NBC broadcasting the race and the media coverage, the track personnel, the rescue and safety personnel, the NASCAR personnel. At Darlington, there's going to be 200 to 300, and that's it. They're limiting teams to 13 people each. That includes the driver. There won't be any team owners there. There won't be any family there. And so everyone is cutting back. And whoever's there together has to stay together. You can wave over at the other pit crew if you want, but you're not going over there and talking to them.
What other sort of health precautions are they implementing aside from, limiting the number of people?
This weekend at Darlington, there is no practice. There is no qualifying. Typically, race weekends are three-day weekends. The teams unload on Friday morning. They have a couple of different practice sessions. They'll practice at least once on Saturday. They have a qualifying session, and they're working on the cars nonstop in the garage. And you have 40-plus teams literally working shoulder to shoulder in an enclosed garage. This weekend at Darlington, the starting grid is going to be based on the championship point standings, based on the races that they have run this year. and the teams are going to be spread out instead of underneath this old school 1960s kind of carport garage that they have at Darlington, which is Darlington Raceway, for folks who don't know. It's like Fenway Park, or it's, you know, it's like Wrigley. It's the track that probably is too old to still be out there, but it's too cool to get rid of. And so normally this is very cramped quarters. The teams are going to be spread out. The race car drivers are going to be there in their multi-million dollar motor coaches they live in, but without their families. They're going to be alone. And they will stay in those motor coaches until it's time to walk to the race car. Anyone not wearing a face mask will be thrown out of the garage immediately. And if you're in the pits, which there's no way to pit a race car without being shoulder to shoulder, but in those situations, those guys are all wearing face covers, gloves, fire suits, and helmets anyway. So that doesn't really change a lot.
Ryan, you've mentioned that there's no practice, that this is going to be cold turkey. For folks like me who don't know how this all works, how important is practice in NASCAR, and how do the drivers feel about this?
Well, it is important, and it's more important at certain racetracks than it is at others. And I mentioned Darlington was the original NASCAR super speedway, asphalt speedway.
This is the largest track for stock car racing in the world. Barreling into the first turn with everything turned on. Look at them climb that wall.
It's just over a mile and a half in size. It's egg-shaped because when they built it, they had to work around a guy's bass fishing pond. That's how old school it is. And it's in the sand hills of the Carolinas, so the track is very rough. It chews up tires. And so the drivers are a little nervous about no practice at Darlington. It's going to be a little bit of a challenge going in cold turkey. Jimmie Johnson said that, you know, in his entire, he's been racing since he was 6 years old. He's never walked into a racetrack and just taken the green flag cold turkey like they're going to do at Darlington on Sunday.
So this Sunday's race is the first in a 7-race, 11-day schedule that NASCAR has put together. Can you explain how that's going to work?
Yeah, it's bonkers is how it's going to work.
Darlington Raceway has never hosted three Cup Series in a single season, let alone three races in 4 days.
We're excited, but yet we also know we have a big responsibility on us. We have to get this right.
The last time that anything like that happened in NASCAR was in the 1960s when they would run 60 races a year. But even then, they were racing on short tracks and dirt tracks, and they were running 100-mile races on a Wednesday night and then going and running at Darlington. So to race at Darlington twice, which I mentioned is so technically difficult, and then to run the Coca-Cola 600, which is NASCAR's endurance race, and then another race at Charlotte, the physical part of it is going to be it's going to be pretty demanding.
So normally drivers say get much larger breaks between races.
It's 1 week. If you're Jimmie Johnson and you run strictly in the Cup Series, the closest you're ever running a race is you might run a race on a Sunday afternoon and then run a race the next Saturday night. So 6 days. And so 7 races and 4 Cup races in 11 days. It's going to be interesting. But I'll say this, NASCAR has been looking at changing the schedule very dramatically in 2021 anyway. So in a strange way, this is kind of a dress rehearsal for some of the ideas they were wanting to try anyway. So if it works, we'll probably see a lot more of this in the future. For folks that don't know, most NASCAR teams, almost all the NASCAR teams, including the engine builders, all the support businesses, they're all based in the Charlotte area. So say for Hendrick Motorsports, where Jimmie Johnson drives and Jeff Gordon and Dale Jr., all those guys used to race, from that race shop to the Darlington Raceway is about an hour and a half. The drive from Hendrick Motorsports to the Charlotte Motor Speedway is a mile. So those two racetracks were purposely picked because they're easy to get to. They don't want teams on airplanes. They don't want teams gone for multiple days in a row. So with that in mind, the races that NASCAR will more than likely start to announce in their schedule in June are going to be places like Martinsville Speedway, which is an hour and a half north of Charlotte. Maybe Atlanta, which is a few hours away. Bristol Motor Speedway. The racetracks that are the old school Southeastern racetracks will be the first ones up, really just because they're local and you don't have to spend the night.
It's fascinating how just an event like this makes us not only, you know, consider the realities of public gatherings and public health, but also where these things happen in this country and, you know, just the geography of it all.
And then there's another wrinkle to it, which is NASCAR, more than any other sport, is dependent upon sponsorship dollars. It's the stickers on the cars, right? And it's the logos embroidered on the uniforms. And because of cutbacks at corporations who sponsor the sport, that's caused cutbacks across the board in the sport. While NASCAR was planning this return, they also just had a big round of layoffs internally. And the race teams have had layoffs. I mean, the Charlotte Motor Speedway just had to lay off the operations man who'd been there forever. He's the guy who would be in charge of whatever it is they're having to do to employ the social distancing rules. And he doesn't work there anymore because they couldn't afford him. I mean, years ago, Humpy Wheeler, the great racetrack promoter and track president for years at Charlotte Motor Speedway, he said to me, he said, it doesn't matter if people are there or not. You have to have events going on just to make your keep yourself relevant. And so these racetracks want to be open. These states want these racetracks open. But more importantly, the sponsors on the hoods of those race cars are like, when are we getting back to the racetrack? And so I think there's been a lot more pressure on NASCAR to get back, more so maybe than any other sport.
In a moment, let's talk about that pressure and why NASCAR might be particularly eager to get things going.
We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
So, Ryan, you have been covering NASCAR for many, many years. How has its popularity changed over the last decade?
Last decade has been rough. I mean, it's been a very difficult time. You know, I came along in the mid-90s when Dale Earnhardt Sr. was at the height of his powers. And I have unapologetically thanked Jeff Gordon so many times for my entire career, because when I started at ESPN was the week that he won the first Brickyard 400 in Indianapolis. And you know, his popularity took the sport to a level that no one could have imagined. And so the boom days of the 90s and the 2000s, you know, even after Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s death, there was a surge in popularity. They were so flush with cash. And so that's not the sport it is now. It's a very complicated list of reasons of why the popularity went down. But part of it was, a big part of it was, the Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s and the Jeff Gordons and the Tony Stewarts and the Mark Martins and the Rusty Wallaces, they all retired. And over the last 10 years, they have fought dwindling attendance, struggled with television ratings, and, you know, they've struggled keeping sponsors on the cars ever since the market crash of 08. That kind of exposed their business model, and they've had a hard time recovering. This is bad timing for any pandemic ever, no matter when it comes along. But for NASCAR, it was particularly devastating. And so when you've seen what's happened with this iRacing thing, 1.5 million people a week watching drivers play video games on television, I did not see that coming, and neither did NASCAR. And I really believe that part of the reason they want to come back maybe a little sooner than everyone else is so that they can own the television sets with actual race cars, because they did a pretty good job of owning them on a Sunday afternoon in fake race cars.
You mentioned iRacing, which is basically a racing simulator that NASCAR drivers already use for practice runs in their own homes. And during the quarantine, Ryan, they've been using it to hold virtual races. So these broadcasts have attracted a pretty big audience. Is it the same people who normally watch NASCAR or different fans?
It's a mix of both. I think old school race fans have watched drivers play video games from their basement, and they would have never believed they would have done that. And then you have this esports world that I know most of those kids aren't playing. They don't have cars. You know, I can't get my daughter to take her driver's license test. It's just that generation, just cars is not their thing. However, esports, that is their thing. And so there's been a much younger audience watching a lot of these esports. So iRacing is this incredibly detailed racing simulator software. They don't like it when you call it a video game, and I get that. I remember years ago when the iRacing guys first started showing up at the racetrack, they were driving around the tracks with like these lasers, and they were collecting all this data, and we're like, what are these nerds doing out here? And then once it suddenly showed up on people's computers and the race car drivers jumped on board. I mean, listen, Dale Earnhardt Jr. is an iRacing addict, and NASCAR, to cut costs, stopped doing a lot of actual physical on-track testing. And so the drivers started turning to iRacing because they realized it was a hyper-accurate way for them to get in practice laps. These guys already had the rigs in their houses. So when Fox and iRacing and NASCAR said, well, what if we televise this? Those guys were like, great. And young guys like William Byron have been kicking the old guys like Jimmy Johnson's butts. It's been a little bit of a sponsorship boon for those young guys because race fans know who they are now because they're really good at video games.
It was during one of those events in April when Kyle Larson, who's one of NASCAR's few minority drivers, used the N-word, and he was ultimately fired from his team. What sort of impact did that have on NASCAR?
It was a really bad couple of weeks.
Language, that was racist language.
It's not okay. It's never okay.
I believe that the sanction body handled it about as well as they could have, and it took less than 24 hours for all of Kyle Larson's sponsors to ditch him, for NASCAR to suspend him from actual racing whenever it returned. And now Kyle Larson is a man without a ride in the NASCAR Cup Series and has gone back to his dirt track roots. It got so real, Mina, that we all kind of, I jokingly wrote like a race report on one of the earliest, really the first big iRacing event. And the next week I was writing about the fact that Bubba Wallace lost a sponsor because the sponsor was angry because Bubba rage quit in the middle of a game. He turned his computer off.
Come on, quit! Oh. God!
Y'all have a good one.
Peace out!
And then the next week, we had Kyle Larson dropping a racial slur because he thought he was on a private communications channel and he actually was being broadcast.
I can see it. You can't hear me? Hey.
Kyle, you're talking to everyone, bud.
Yep, we heard that.
Oh, damn. You did not listen to that.
And so we started off kind of jokingly covering fake racing. And all of a sudden, in the middle of it, we had really angry people and we had a genuine race controversy. What was fake suddenly felt very real. And in a weird way, too, it put eyes on the sport. The next week, the ratings were big after Kyle Larson was suspended because I think there was a group of people that didn't even know they were doing that until Kyle Larson decided to be an idiot.
And you wrote about how this incident in particular reinforced perceptions that the sport has had issues with diversity.
I say this as a joke, but it's also a fact. I live in Charlotte, just down the road from the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and it is a phenomenal facility. But the diversity display is very, very small. It's basically one glass case on the third floor. It is an embarrassing, kind of always in the background, mark on the history of NASCAR. And at a time when they have gone to great lengths to try and fix that image, and it's not the case anymore.
So, Ryan, the reasons why NASCAR's audience has shrunk over the last decade or so are complex. There's a number of factors that have gone into the decline, but this moment at which NASCAR can come back when few other sports have that opportunity strikes me as a moment of, I guess, tremendous potential for NASCAR. They could essentially be, you know, one of the very few live sports on television. Do you think they regard it as such?
100%. And, you know, the seminal moment in the history of NASCAR when it comes to being in the national consciousness of sports was the 1979 Daytona 500.
Now you're watching live the 21st annual Daytona 500 here on CBS Today.
It was the first time that CBS had ever televised the Daytona 500 from green flag to checkered flag, the entire race. This was live on a Sunday afternoon, and the entire East Coast was snowed in. And so the ratings were through the roof.
100,000 people on their feet watching these two cars.
The finish was probably the greatest finish in the history of motorsports.
The white flag is out. One lap to go. This is it. Last lap.
Donnie Allison was banging fenders with Cale Yarborough.
Donnie Allison throws the block. Cale hits him. He slides. Donnie Allison slides. They're hitting the wall. They're head on the wall. They slide down to the inside. They're out of it.
They end up in the infield in a fist fight.
And there's a fight between Cale Yarborough and Donnie Allison.
Fighting live on television.
The tempers overflowing.
Meanwhile, Richard Petty inherits the lead, and he holds off A.J. Foyt and Darrell Waltrip to win the race.
Here they come. Waltrip trying to slingshot. Petty is out in front at the line. Waltrip to the inside. Petty wins it. Down on pit road. It has gone crazy.
It was phenomenal. And from that point forward, people started paying attention to NASCAR that never had before. And the reason was because they watched it on a Sunday afternoon when there was nothing else to watch. One of the main reasons that NASCAR is looking at overhauling the way it does its schedule in the future is because why compete with football in the fall? You should try to own the summer and own the spring when you own the television audience on a Sunday afternoon. People need sports. And so give them something on a Sunday afternoon. They're not dumb. They know that.
So as I mentioned at the beginning, I am not a NASCAR fan. Give me a pitch, Ryan. Why should I get excited about watching NASCAR and getting into it for the first time?
What I have always said is anyone who argues that race car drivers are not athletes have never been in a race car. I have. A lot. All it takes is about a lap, and you will understand what this is. And it's also the strategy of it. If you really watch it and you really listen to these phenomenal commentators really break down what this takes. And if you're a football fan, Joe Gibbs Racing is the best team in the sport right now. That's worth watching, right?
Mm-hmm.
And oh, by the way, we have fights. So
there we go. Now I'm sold.
That's what you were waiting on. All due respect to the UFC guys, race car drivers are small. They're like Yoda. Race car drivers are small, but you do not want to fight them.
Thanks so much, Ryan.
Anytime, Mina Kimes.
Coming up, as sports leagues begin to come back online, what would it take for fans to return too? Hi guys, given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Here's a number I want you to know. 76. That's the percentage of people responding to a survey from 538 in Ipsos who said that if there were no restrictions right now, they would be unlikely to attend a live sporting event. As sports like UFC and NASCAR come back and the major leagues begin working on plans to resume play in empty stadiums, many have wondered, when will those seats be filled again? The results from 538's poll, which posed these questions to over 1,000 Americans in early May, suggest it may take a while. It will also take changes in our habits and advances in science. The only thing that would make the majority of people significantly more comfortable attending games, according to the poll, is a COVID-19 vaccine. Responders did say that mandatory mask wearing, social distancing, and fever checks would all help ease them back into stadiums. While fans are wary, and rightfully so, the poll's results weren't entirely negative for sports. 62% of the people who responded said they're more likely to watch them on TV if they come back. They just aren't ready to be there when it happens. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.